From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. We've got a great show ahead for you today, and with November right around the corner, of course, we're looking at things like purgatory and saints, and that's the perfect thing for our show today. We've got Susan Tassone, the Purgatory Lady, talking to us about her new children's purgatory book, New Friends Now and Forever, A Story About the Holy Souls. And we'll also be joined by Alec Torres, the co-author with Joshua Charles of the book Persecuted from Within, stories of the lives of various saints who have gone through persecutions both outside and inside the Catholic Church. It's a new book out from Sophia Institute Press. And today is the feast day of St. Jude, and we're filming an episode of the new forthcoming EWTN television series called Hidden Gems, Catholic Shrines in America, and we'll be at that National Shrine of St. Jude in Chicago. Now, this is a series that I'm the executive producer for, and we'll highlight different American shrines and tell the stories of how they came to be and what a pilgrim might find on their visit. First episode about the National Shrine of the Miraculous Medal in Perryville, Missouri, airs on November 27th. More information can be found at hiddengems.tv. And check out Explore with the Miracle Hunter, my series where I travel all around the world. We're going to Paray-le-Monial. And in that visit to Paray-le-Monial in France, St. Margaret Mary Ellicott first experienced dramatic visions of Jesus' Sacred Heart, and I'll be exploring the origins of this cherished devotion. And that's tonight on Explore with the Miracle Hunter as we visit Paray-le-Monial. And next week on Wednesday, November 8th, at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, They Might Be Saints will be the episode on Rhoda Wise. In Canton, Ohio, Rhoda Wise was well known as a mystic with many spiritual gifts and healing miracles, one of them experienced by Rita Rizzo, the future Mother Angelica. And I'll be relating her remarkable story. So check that one out next week on Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. They Might Be Saints, Rhoda Wise. Later in the show, we're going to be looking at the 365 Days with Mary project, like we always do. We've got the Virgin of the Rosary of El Parute in Lagunillas in Venezuela in the year 1651. And the might-be saint of the day is Blessed Germain of Talroix from France, who died in the year 1018. And the question of the week, is the Rosary of the Seven Sorrows of Mary from the Our Lady of Covejo Visions approved by the Catholic Church? I'll do my best to answer that one in just a little bit. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this each and every week where we look at the miracles happening around the world and those things that relate to miracles. You can follow my Facebook page of The Miracle Hunter, where I post each and every day different news items that I find related to miracles. And so the miracle news for this week, the Pope has approved a decree on a miracle attributed to an Argentine blessed. Now, Pope Francis approved a decree regarding a miracle attributed to the intercession of Argentine Blessed Maria Antonia of St. Joseph, known as Mama Antula. The Holy See Press Office communicated that on Tuesday afternoon, Pope Francis met with Cardinal Marcello Semeraro, the prefect of the Dicastery of the Causes of Saints, where he authorized the promulgation of the decree of the miracle attributed to the intercession of Blessed Maria Antonia of St. Joseph. She was born Antonio de Paz y Figueroa in 1730 in Sipilca in Santiago de Estero in Argentina. And she was known as Mama Antula. She founded the House of Spiritual Exercises in Buenos Aires, Argentina, where she died on March 7, 1799. And after the expulsion of the Jesuits from the country, she went from town to town to the poor regions of the northeastern Argentina, promoting retreats in the Ignatian tradition. In only 8 years, she managed to offer and provide retreats to over 70,000 people. And so that's Mama Antula, as she came to be known. She will be declared a saint because Pope Francis has approved a new miracle related to her. Find out more about this. I've posted the link on the Facebook page of The Miracle Hunter. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question and give out a prize to an emailer who writes in with the fastest with the correct answer. People who know me, my friends know I love pub trivia, so on a random night, you might find me in a bar playing pub trivia, but this is Catholic pub trivia. And so people who get the question right, the fastest respondent, is going to win the prize, the Miracle Ear Hunter image of the faces of Mary. Now, last week, we talked about the Sacred Heart and St. Margaret Mary Ellicoke with Emily Jaminet, an author. And so the question was, what was the name of St. Mary Margaret Mary Ellicoke's spiritual director, who was also a saint, St. Claude de Colombert? And Annalise from St. Louis was the one who wrote in fastest with the correct answer. Now, for this week's question, we have, maybe it's an easy one, in what city is the Museum of the Holy Souls in Purgatory located? That question again, in what city is the Museum of the Holy Souls in Purgatory located? If you think you know that answer, want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com or just go to my website, miraclehunter.com. And the fastest respondent with the correct answer is going to win that prize. And answers and winners will be shown on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break. But when we come back, we're going to be talking with Susan Tassone, the Purgatory Lady herself, about her brand new book, a children's book about purgatory. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. We talk about miracles on this show, and miracles give us insight into the afterlife, what awaits us. And of course, as Catholics, we believe in heaven, hell, and purgatory as the three final things, the last options after our death. And it's a difficult thing, of course, the Catholic Church teaching on purgatory. Protestants don't want to touch it, and it's always a difficult debate or conversation. But it's something that we need to know from a young age. It's not something that we have to convince ourselves later in life. We should know these things from when we're young. But teaching children about purgatory is a tough task, perhaps just as tough as teaching an adult because of the fear factor. Purgatory is somewhat of a scary proposition for people who are young. Well, there's a brand new book called New Friends, Now and Forever, A Story About the Holy Souls. It's a children's book about purgatory. And of course, it's written by the Purgatory Lady herself, Susan Tassone, the author of many books on purgatory and the world's absolute expert on purgatory. We welcome back to the show one of our friends, Susan Tassone.
Miracle Hunter Michael, it's so always good to be back, especially this time of year. You know when to call me Michael because you want to get out of purgatory.
Everybody does, or everybody should want to.
Oh, you want the secrets.
Yeah, exactly. We all want to know, and you're the one who studied it the most. And so this is a very interesting book because when I first heard about it, I thought, you know, addressing children on purgatory is a very tough task because it's scary for a lot of people. So why did you write this book on purgatory for children?
Why I did it, Michael, I've been wanting to do it for children for several years because we have 9 books published on purgatory. We have a great movie, which I'm sure you saw, and people can see this online, Purgatory, the Forgotten Church. We have a novel that you're familiar with by Teresa Lindon, Tortured Soul. She's been on EWTN. But, Michael, there was no book on purgatory for children. It had to be done. We had to reach the children, and even the great saints confirmed that these souls need our prayers, and we need, as the church militant, to help them. So we needed to bring the church's teachings about the souls to the children, and we needed it to do, Michael, in a very faithful, creative, inspiring way that emphasizes God's love for us. And I really feel that we accomplished it with this book because it's up to the parents to keep alive the devotions and the customs and the practices of our faith. And the church teaches that you're the primary educators, the parents of their children, and it's in the family that the faith is first transmitted. So we have to make these spiritual investments for all future generations to ensure peace and truth for our own descendants. So that was another reason we needed to form kind and merciful hearts in our children. We needed to plant the seed of reverence for the deceased in their young hearts. So we're assured of their prayers, and they understand how to pray for the dead. Because if we don't, Michael, they'll become, as Pope Benedict said, godless. So we have to teach them the meaning of all souls. We have to teach them to go without what they enjoy, like sacrifices for that are appropriate for their age. And we have to help them accept difficulties. We have to teach them about the power of prayer and sacrifice, and that when you pray for the souls, and that's where the title came in, that, you know, of your families and friends, that they become your friends forever. So that's why I did it. It had to be done.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Susan Tassone, the Purgatory Lady herself, about her brand new book on purgatory, New Friends Now and Forever, available on Amazon or anywhere Catholic books are sold. And this is a book that's, in my mind, it's got to be a little bit of a challenge, not only for children. You might say children might find purgatory scary, but how do you teach the difficult doctrine of purgatory to children?
Yes, you mentioned two things, Michael. Isn't it scary? Yes, it is, and it's scary for adults too. So one of the objectives was to develop an understanding of why the Holy Souls suffer and how we can develop a relationship with them. So I wanted to be sure, Michael, that the book was warm, it was a gentle tone for kids, and how we introduce the souls in a welcoming way through the friendship of an elderly couple at the parents. So I wanted to describe purgatory in ways that put a smile on children's faces and parents too, rather than frighten them. And so how do you do all this, Michael? I had one of the best children's editors in the field. What did Jesus do? She told me this. And how did he teach, Michael? He spoke in parables. He told stories. So New Friends Now and Forever talks with children, then at children, in a story. So it's about twins, Ben and Hope, who become prayer pals with Mr. Ray, that elderly friend from the parish. We kind of term it your pew buddy. You see, have pew buddies that you see every Sunday or maybe even every during the week. And so they agree, they learn about that Mr. Ray's mom, his wife, Gloria, had died, and they agree to pray for her. And then along the way, they learn that purgatory is real and it's nothing to fear, because I wanted to make this loud and clear. We took the fear out of purgatory and we replaced it with God's love for us. So it's not a punishment. It's God's mercy. And the best part, Michael, the children learn that they have very powerful prayers, that their prayers and sacrifice help the faithful departed reach heaven. And then they become their forever friends. So that's how we approached it, through a story.
No, it's wonderful, and the book is fully illustrated, and I think children will enjoy it, and parents will enjoy teaching their children about purgatory. The name of the book is called New Friends Now and Forever, from Susan Tassone. And you mentioned one of the central characters in your book who dies, and with death, of course, for adults and children, everyone, there's sad feelings, there's grief. How does this book help children understand and deal with some of those feelings?
Yeah, it addresses that too. It's important to shape your message to the level of the understanding of the child, as you know, Michael. You know, if they're younger, it's really best to say that person, he or she died, and that they loved them very much, and that they felt terrible in leaving, and that what can the child do? You can pray for them, the child can pray and then ask Jesus to comfort them. It's always sad to lose someone. People have many feelings when someone dies, so ask the child what they feel, and ask them to imagine that person is there, and what would they like to say to that person? No matter what they feel, no matter what the child says, don't correct them, but acknowledge the pain and give the child things that they can do to help the deceased. Write a letter, light candles, or they can make drawings, and they can share this book with them.
And we're talking today with Susan Tassone, author of the new children's purgatory book, New Friends Now and Forever. And we call this a children's book, but does this help catechize adults as well?
Boy, I'm getting this all the time, Michael, because I've been out on the field, out on the purgatory trail, and the adults are buying it for themselves. There's a conference up in Colorado, Michael. You may have been up there, the Marian Conference in Colorado. He bought them for the adults because it helps them understand purgatory. And what we did, we have a special grown-up page right in the beginning of the book that explains purgatory to them in very easy, simple terms and what I think that the children might ask them. For example, they might say, what if the soul's already in heaven? What happens to that person? And we explain it, accidental glory. If the soul's already in heaven, that soul gets two things. It gets an increase in its intimacy with God. It gets an increase in its intercessory power, which is in the Catechism 958. So the lesson is for the child is you never stop praying for them because you're giving them more strength and power to help you. So we have a whole section for parents. We have a Did You Know page for parents and children. We have a Seek and Find page. I realized there were so many symbols in the book, and of course in our faith, that I didn't realize it until the end of the book that we need to address this. And so what I did was, is I in the back you're going to find things that are listed in a church, like bells or palms or the crucifix or holy water, the monstrance, and we define them, and then there's a page for the child to go and find it. So it's an interactive activity for both the parent and the child, because, Michael, we see these symbols. You know, we see cross keys. We see the pelican that's on a vestment feeding the chicks. We see the Sacred Heart. But do we really understand what the definition of them are? You know, or do we understand what they're for and their purpose? So the adults are going to learn as well as the children.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Susan Sassone, author of a brand new book about purgatory for children. And so moving forward, as we look to this book and the characters that are in this book, and the liturgical seasons in the book, there are so many things to learn from this book on purgatory. What is your favorite sort of side benefit for people not only learning about purgatory, but learning for the other aspects of our church?
Actually, it starts out in the spring during Easter, and then of course the fest, you know, there's the priest is, you know, greeting them, and he's in, you know, he's in the liturgical color for the season. So the liturgical seasons, the colors and the symbols of the priest's vestments are symbolic for the children, pointing to the Eucharist. We have one with a pelican feeding her young that's on his vestment. We have an All Souls vestment that actually is handmade from French nuns from the Shrine of the World Center Prayer for the Dead. They offer masses 5 days a week for the deceased in France, and we actually have a website. So the illustrations, you know, point to the seasons of the church. So we start in spring, and then we have the liturgical green in during summer, and then in the fall we have a special vestment for the All Souls Day, because it takes you all the way to All Souls Day. And the places and the characters I had fun with, Michael, Ben and Hope. Ben is the one of my favorite names. I come from the, you know, from the 70s, like Benny and the Jets by Elton John. I love that song. We should sing it during, you know, when we're having dinner, you know, at the dorm. And I just love that name. But he's the favorite son of Jacob. Hope represents the virtue to never lose hope. If you notice, the parish is named after a popular purgatory saint, Saint Gertrude. The mom is pregnant throughout the book. I'm pointing to life, that, you know, it's a circle. You know, there's a time to be born, there's a time to die, and while Mr. Ray had aged and died, she brings forth baby Nicholas, who's also patron of the Holy Soul. So everything is pointing to something. Nothing was done for just out of the arbitrary. Even the dog is named Bosco after Saint John Bosco, who was the patron of youth. So everything was done with God's love hand, you know, in the book. And the ending is epic, Michael. You know, you saw the ending. How does it end? How do you want it to end? Where does it end? Well, where do we want to be? Home. We want to be reunited. We're in paradise. That's where it ends. And Benedict said that paradise, heaven, is a reunion. Everyone comes back together. Mr. Ray, Gloria, you know, his the dog is in paradise, because children are going to say, is my dog going to be there? Am I going to be able to eat? So we have a picnic in the background. Am I going to be able to play? Because remember, because it's for children. Yes, you can. There's children playing soccer. There's somebody flying a kite. In fact, I was speaking at John Cantius here in Chicago, and the little girl said to me, is there going to be bubble gum in paradise? There's going to be... You're going to be totally content, totally happy. And there's a theological background, too. It wasn't just a playground. I was dealing with the professor, Father Mark Lakovich, professor of eschatology at Bormio Seminary, that told me, you know, make sure that the kids are in their regular clothes. Their favorite saints from ages 6 to 10, what are the favorite saints? They're in there cheering on the couple. Jesus in there playing Ring Around the Rosary. We have the city of Jerusalem in there. We have the running water. Don't ask me the psalm. I forget the psalm. The deer. We have the lion and the lamb together. It was breathtaking, Michael, the ending. So there is a happy ending, of course, where we all want to be, together, home, with our families in heaven.
Absolutely. The name of this book is New Friends, Now and Forever, A Story About the Holy Souls. And we've been talking today with Susan Tassone, the Purgatory Lady. And for people who want to pick up this book, Susan, what's the best place that they can find New Friends?
The very best place is to go to ewtnrc.com. They have a discount, and you're going to get, you know, a special edition from them, and I highly recommend. Of course, you can go elsewhere, but, you know, we're about evangelizing our faith, Michael, and we're there to support each other and the apostolates, the Miracle Hunter, Purgatory Lady, all these trying to get the word out about this magnificent faith that we have and the treasures of our faith. So I highly recommend ewtnrc.com, and they're ready, they're prepared. In fact, you're going to see me starting on Sunday on Bookmark. You'll see me on Jeanette Bankovic. You'll see the catalog show. I'm radio. So this is the season. All Souls is coming up in about a week. And remember, it's the whole month of the souls. Most souls are released on Christmas, not All Souls Day. So we want to get those souls home for Christmas.
Absolutely. Well, we're so grateful to you, Susan Tassone, for joining us again on the Miracle Hunter Show, this time talking about a children's book named New Friends, Now and Forever, A Story About the Holy Souls. Thank you so much, Susan Tassone,
Michael,
for joining us on today's program.
My pleasure. And remember, it's a great book for fall. It's a great book for somebody that has died. And it's a great book for Christmas.
Wonderful. God bless. And that was New Friends, Now and Forever, A Story About the Holy Souls. You can check that one out at ewtnrc.com, the EWTN Religious Catalog, and pick up the brand new book from Susan Tassone. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll try to answer the question of the week. Is the Rosary of the Seven Sorrows of Mary from the Our Lady of Cabejo apparitions approved by the Church? Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. I love getting emails from people writing in with questions, but I also love when I give talks and people approach me with questions or in the question and answer segment. So I give talks about 20 times per year. I travel to Catholic parishes, shrines, conferences, and I give a talk sometimes these days about Eucharistic miracles where I talk for about 45 minutes and then 15 minutes, 30 minutes, even longer sometimes. People pepper me with questions about miracles happening all around the world, and I love it, and I do my best to try to answer these questions. But we have a good question for us today. And so the question is, Dear Miracle Hunter, I really like the Miracle Hunter website. Is the Rosary of the Seven Sorrows of Mary from the Our Lady of Cabejo Visions approved? I didn't see anything on your website. Thank you, Sean D. Well, thanks, Sean, for your question. And when we talk about the Seven Sorrows Rosary, of course, we have the regular rosary that we all pray, but the often forgotten Seven Sorrows Rosary came to light 40 years ago in Cabejo, but it's a centuries old devotion, actually, the Seven Sorrows Rosary. And it came to light when Our Lady asked for it again through the visionaries of Cabejo and through the Rwandan genocide survivor, Immaculée Ilibagiza. And this particular chaplet dates back hundreds of years and was developed from the devotion to the Sorrowful Mother, which stretches back to the Middle Ages.
Now, each of the seven decades corresponds with one of the seven sorrows of Mary. You may know this, the prophecy of Simeon, the flight into Egypt, the child Jesus lost in the temple. Mary meets Jesus carrying the cross. Mary stands at the foot of the cross. Mary receives the body of Jesus in her arms after his death, and the body of Jesus is placed in the tomb. Those are the traditional seven sorrows of Mary. Now, the chaplet of the seven sorrows looks very much like a regular rosary with its decades of 10 Hail Marys, but in this one, there are seven groups of seven Hail Marys, each group separated by an Our Father. And the rosary or chaplet of the seven sorrows begins with the sign of the cross, act of contrition, three Hail Marys, and another variation puts three Hail Marys at the very end. And next come seven groups of seven Hail Marys for each of the seven sorrows of Our Blessed Mother. And so the question was, is this an approved practice, praying this Seven Sorrows Rosary? Yes, it is. It's a very old one, in fact, but it really just came back into popularity 40 years ago or so at Our Lady of Cabejo, those apparitions in Rwanda. So Marian Father Lezek Zalnusiak, he's the director of the Marian Evangelization Center of Cabejo, he repeated what the visionaries told him in a summary of Our Lady's messages, in which she mentions the seven sorrows. And here we go. The Holy Virgin insisted on the need for prayer. She said that the world is bad. It is necessary to pray much for this world that is so bad, to pray for sinners, to pray for their conversion. She insisted on a lot of need of conversion. Convert to God, convert to God, convert to God. While saying that people don't respect God's commands, that people have a hard heart, she also asked us to meditate on the mysteries of the rosary and to recite it every day. She also taught us the Rosary of the Seven Sorrows. She asked to pray it every Tuesday and Friday, and she asked us to obey the Church, to love God in truth, and to love our neighbor in humility and simplicity. She spoke of the need for mortification, a spirit of penitence and sacrifice. She also spoke of the need for suffering, to bear our sufferings every day. She said that no one enters heaven without suffering. She also told us that acts of charity for the poor make us beautiful flowers that God likes. And this, again, is from the Marian Father, Lezek Zalnusiak, the director of the Marian Evangelization Center of Cabejo, when he was repeating what the Cabejo visionaries had told him, summarizing Our Lady's messages related to the seven sorrows. So thank you so much, Sean, for your question. If you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com or just go to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe I'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We do this every week where we look at the Marian devotion of the day as it lines up exactly with the day in the calendar year. You all know Fatima, May 13th, or Lourdes, February 11th, or Guadalupe, December 12th. But believe it or not, there's a different other Marian devotion for each and every day of the year. And so for today's date, October 28th, we've got the Virgin of the Rosary of El Parute from Lagunillas in Venezuela in the year 1651. And the story goes that in the northwest of Venezuela, connected to the Gulf of Venezuela, Lake Maracaibo had populations that lived on it in homes built on stilts. And the Parute, now known as the Pueblo Viejo River, flows into the town of Lagunillas de Agua. An Indian sitting in a stilt house there recovered a piece of wood that kept floating on the water on October 28, 1651, and an image of the Virgin of the Rosary was present on the wood and became an object of pilgrimage when it was enshrined in the church. Despite being surrounded by water, Lagunillas has suffered many fires, and this image was protected from harm and resides in the church of the Morochas district. The miraculous event is celebrated every year on October 28th. So today's feast day, October 28th, is the Virgin of the Rosary of El Parute in Lagunillas, Venezuela, from the year 1651. For more information on this fascinating devotion, or any of the other fascinating devotions from around the world, you can go to 365dayswithmary.com, or you can go to the website or the Facebook page of 365 Days with Mary and join any of the 10,000 other followers who get a daily devotion to Mary on their Facebook feed. Let's take a look at They Might Be Saints. We do this every week where we look at those people on the path to sainthood. We're talking about servants of God, venerables, blesseds, before they have all their miracles and are declared a saint by the Vatican. And we talk about from miracle workers to martyrs to those ordinary people living extraordinary lives of heroic virtue. These are the people who make us wonder if someday they might be saints. And of course, this connects with my television series, They Might Be Saints, which airs on EWTN on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, and also my book, They Might Be Saints, which is available from EWTNRC.com, the EWTN religious catalog. And the latest news we have in sainthood causes, the Nigerian martyr Vivian Ogu is now on the path toward canonization. Now, the cause for canonization is advancing 14-year-old Nigerian-born Catholic lay girl Vivian Ogu, who was killed in Edo State in 2009 because of her refusal to be defiled. On November 15, 2009, Vivian Ogu spoke about the topic of virginity at her parish, St. Paul's Catholic Church, on Sunday morning. And in the evening, she was forcibly abducted alongside her elder sister by three armed men who robbed her parents of their valuables. Now, Vivian opted to be killed by the armed men rather than being sexually defiled. And Father Stephen Dumbiri, the director of the Vivian Ogu movement, spoke with Vatican News in the interview on the life, death, and process of her canonization. He says, "She was always found instructing and guiding other kids on the necessity of maintaining purity and defending their virginity, even if it meant giving their lives," said Father. And she was passionate about the Lord. The 14-year-old girl joined an interdenominational group where she had maintained the position of assistant prayer leader until her death, she noted. He said that in addition, she took part in almost all the activities in the parish community where the children were given the responsibility of organizing liturgical activities for the day, said Father Dumbiri. For liturgical celebrations, she would always take either the reading or the prayer of the faithful. And through her inspiration, the parish council approved the children's choir, which grew in about 20 children to nearly 60 children at the time of her death. On October 26, 2019, the Catholic Church in Nigeria gathered at the Vivian Ogu Missionary Animation Center for the national celebration of the Extraordinary Missionary Month of October. At this event, Pope Francis was represented by the president of the Pontifical Mission Societies, Archbishop Giampietro Dal Toroso, and in May 2023, Archbishop Ukabezi approved Christian Martinelli, who is based in Rome, as the postulator of her cause. The Catholic Bishops' Conference of Nigeria gave its approval that the cause of her beatification and canonization be opened in September of 2023. And the edict for the cause of beatification and canonization of the Servant of God was read and paced at the Holy Cross Cathedral on Saturday, October 7, 2023, by Archbishop Ukabezi. And the edict, which would be for about 2 months, was issued to call on the public with testimonies on the life of Vivian Ogu that be of good value for the cause. Absolutely amazing. We might have a brand new saint, a Nigerian martyr, Vivian Ogu, who is on the path to canonization. Find out more. I'll be posting this story to the Facebook page of The Miracle Hunter. Now let's take a look at the Might Be Saint of the Day. For today's date, October 28th, we've got Blessed Germain of Talroix, who lived in France and died in the year 1018. And Blessed Germain, he was the brother of Saint Ruf. He studied theology at the University of Paris, France, for several years, where he worked with and served as tutor to Saint Bernard of Menthon. He was a Benedictine monk at the Abbey of Savigny in the Savoy region of France, and with several other brother monks, he founded the monastery of Talroix in France, and he served as the first prior. He was pilgrim to the Holy Lands, and he spent his final years, beginning about 1033, as a hermit, living in a cave near Lac de Annecy, a church that is now built above the cave. The town of Saint-Germain-de-Joie in France is named for him. And he was born in 1018 in Talroix in France of natural causes. And his relics are enshrined by St. Francis de Sales in 1621. And his relics are hidden from the anti-Catholic forces of the French Revolution later in the 18th century. And the chapel fell into disrepair, and the relics were lost for several years and then rediscovered in 1830 and then re-enshrined in a new chapel in 1838. He was beatified in 1886 by Pope Leo XIII, and one more miracle will lead him to being declared a saint. For more information on Blessed Germain of Talroix, or They Might Be Saints, check out the website, theymightbesaints.com. And for people who want to watch the show They Might Be Saints, which airs on EWTN on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, on November 8th, we've got the episode of They Might Be Saints related to Rhoda Wise. in Canton, Ohio, Rhoda Wise was well known as a mystic with many spiritual gifts and healing miracles. One of them was experienced by Rita Rizzo, the future Mother Angelica of EWTN. I'll be relating that remarkable story. Tune in on November 8th at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Alec Torres, the co-author with Joshua Charles of Persecuted from Within from Sophia Institute Press, about famous saints who were persecuted both outside and inside the Catholic Church. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. And we've heard the stories over the years of various saints who have gone through great difficulties, both outside the church and inside the church. And those stories from within are oftentimes not told in the full detail that they can be. And we have a new book out from Sophia Institute Press. The name of the book is Persecuted from Within. It's written by Alec Torres, who co-authored it with Joshua Charles. And in light of the feast day of All Saints Day, which is right around the corner, we shine the light on some of these saints who underwent great difficulties on the path to them becoming saints in the first place. We're so excited to welcome to the show today, Alec Torres.
Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Alec, it's good to talk to you today. And what a fascinating book, Persecuted from Within by Sophia Institute Press. We don't see this angle taken when we see the lives of the saints presented, do we? We often see how they're out in the world versus how the church treats them and some of the great challenges and difficulties that they go through. And there are numerous recognizable saints who have gone through this these difficult times. What inspired you to write the book, Persecuted from Within?
Ultimately, it was that I was facing a confusion in my own life in many ways, where I would see sometimes leaders within the church, it could be priests, it could be bishops, it could be higher even, that would say or do things that I was confused about, that I felt were either wrong or potentially confusing, possibly even leading people astray. And I didn't know how I was supposed to deal with that as a good Catholic. You know, I want to be obedient to the church. But sometimes it's just a fact that, the church is run by human beings who make incorrect decisions sometimes, or can be imprudent or even commit grave crimes. So how do I obey them and be a faithful Catholic, or do I ever disobey them? I don't know. So I decided to ask the people who I figured would know, which is the saints. If anybody can answer that question for me, I could see it in their lives, how to live out a fully Catholic, faithful, holy life in the face of confusion and difficulties, even within our own home, our own family of the church.
And when we talk about saints who have undergone great difficulties internally in the church, the list is quite long, isn't it? And recognizable names. What are some of the saints that you featured in the book, Persecuted from Within?
Oh, there's, the list was longer than we could fit in the book. Let's put it that way. It seems to be a common thing. But we have St. Athanasius, who faced the Arian crisis, St. Joan of Arc, St. John Fisher and Thomas More, Teresa of Avila, John of the Cross, Padre Pio, Venerable Fulton Sheen. The list kind of goes on, and it spans really from the earliest eras of the church all the way up until present times.
And we talk about people like Padre Pio, of course, as well, the great miracle worker who encountered great difficulties, or Faustina. And there was some sort of, even St. Margaret Mary Alacoque, when she received the Sacred Heart visions of Jesus. Nobody believed her. And I suppose that's a common thing for visionaries, for them not to be believed from the outset. And so what do we make of this? Of course, we all want to be faithful sons and daughters of the church. What do we do? What do we make of it when we have some of the great examples of holiness in our church being questioned and persecuted in some ways by the church itself?
I think one of the first things that we have to do is to not be scandalized by it. We should be able to point out wrong or to to see when something unjust is being done against somebody who's holy or in the right. But at the same time, we have a risk of thinking, oh, how can God let this happen within the church? You know, how can you let good, you know, we understand in some ways, how can bad things happen to good people from the outside, but from our own leaders, that one's harder to square. So one of the biggest messages we had for Catholics in this book was that when we see this happen, be concerned, but don't be scandalized by it, because it does happen within the church. There's a long history of it, and somehow this is part of God's plan, so we need to keep our faith through it. But also, I think the saints show us a lot how to respond. And one of the lessons that I learned from researching this book and writing about these saints is that in almost every situation, except for a few circumstances, really, the saints did obey and submit. They endured great hardship and great injustice at the hands of their superiors, rather than lash out proudly or many times even to defend themselves publicly, which I admitted was a hard lesson for me to learn myself.
Yeah, talk about that a little bit, the importance of obedience, especially when we're talking about in religious life. That's a major thing that, again, people like Padre Pio and Saint Faustina, they were obedient to the end, even though maybe the persecutions were unknowable why they were happening or they were unjust. Talk about the concept of obedience.
Padre Pio is one of the most perfect examples in this circumstance. He vowed obedience. He's a Capuchin friar, and he took that vow extremely seriously. And like many great mystics, visionaries, miracle workers, he was discounted and even calumniated right off the bat. His local bishop did not think he was legitimate. Really, a series of them did not. And it went all the way up to the Vatican, where they essentially thought that he was a fraud. Many of them, at least, thought he was a fraud. So he faced these somewhat ridiculous restrictions on his life. He couldn't say the Mass publicly. He was banned from hearing confessions. He was barred from communicating with his spiritual director, who was also one of his closest friends. At one point, they even told him that he couldn't show his stigmata to anybody or talk about it or even talk to people in the halls. The restrictions were tyrannical. I think that's not an inaccurate word. But Padre Pio recognized that these restrictions were imposed upon him. This was a burden upon him. It wasn't pushing people away from the church. It wasn't causing them to discount the faith. It was an unjust burden on him. So he submitted to that with great resignation and holiness and silence, and even curbed those around him from using really the tools of the devil, from fighting back with fire in order to relieve these restrictions on him. So his example there is profound.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Alec Torres about the new book from Sophia Institute Press. It's called Persecuted from Within, and it's the stories of various saints who experience difficulties not only in the outside world, but more particularly in the inside of the church, where they were suppressed and they were questioned and they were doubted. And these are the great examples of holiness in our faith. So it's a complicated way to look at some of these stories from all over. And Alec, when you look at these stories, and again, there are so many big names in your book, it's quite eye-opening. And again, we have to approach this with the proper light of faith and trust. What is your hope for people who pick up this book, perhaps who don't even know the stories, and as you mentioned before, might be scandalized by the fact that some of this stuff actually did happen?
In a somewhat paradoxical way, I've actually found that that when I tell people about this book, it brings a hope and peace, because there can be this concern or this fear that we live in horribly unique times. And in many ways, I do think our times are unique. The problems that we face and the confusions that we face are unlike those before. But at the same time, it can help us to understand that, if we're faced with a bishop or even a cardinal, as we've seen here, I'm in Washington, D.C. right now, there's a long history, and that's very troublesome for Catholics to be able to bear, that we can see it in the light of history. And when we understand that we aren't the first to experience this, that God has placed his people in confusing and difficult circumstances internally within the church throughout time, in a way that gives people a lot of hope, because we see that God continues to guide his people out from it every single time, that it doesn't last forever, that he does provide clarity, and ultimately justice is done. sometimes within the lives of the saints and sometimes afterwards, but either way, his justice is done. So I found it does give people great comfort, ironically, even when they're reading stories that can be quite heavy.
And for those people, for those saints detailed in your book, Persecuted from Within, from Sophia Institute Press, for those saints who did encounter such persecution, difficulty, challenges, people not believing the things that they were claiming, perhaps, their superiors, what can we learn from the way that they handled those moments? If you had to look at all the various cases that you've studied, how can we sort of learn from the saints when we encounter things that might be difficult or confusing for us? How can we both have an eye on obedience and also wanting to hold to the truth? Where do we see that balance as presented in the lives of the saints?
This ended up being the main question that we answered in the book, my co-author and I. And you know, we came to it at the end. So if you pick up the book, you know, get through to the conclusion, and we try to draw out these lessons from the saints. That we believe there are general principles that really can apply. So one of the first ones was that when in doubt, they did obey. However difficult that may be, they mortified their will and they submitted to the hierarchy. However, they never did so at the expense of the truth. And many times they would go through great lengths to allow personal trials and personal harms to be inflicted upon them, but they would never lie about anything. You know, even Padre Pio, he would never say, my stigmata aren't real. You know, he was never going to say that, but he did endure the punishment of those who thought it was not real. And we see other saints who far from, you know, being exemplars of silence, you know, living a hidden life, were actually quite vocal. Saint Athanasius in our book, was really a lion of the faith. He was fighting against the grave heresy that was endemic in the church, Arianism, which we go into in much more detail in the book. And he fought for the faith quite boldly and vocally. So there's a line in there that really is, if it's a personal trial, we are called to bear it. But if it's the Catholic faith, if it's the truth of our doctrine, the truth of the magisterium of the church, then we do have an obligation to defend that, to never contradict it, and perhaps even to defend it quite publicly.
We're talking today with Alec Torres, the author of the book Persecuted from Within, from Sophia Institute Press. And for those people who pick up your book, some people may be surprised by what's in there. Some people might be inspired. And some people will just learn that this is the story of our church throughout history, and that's okay too. Your hope, what would you see as the outgrowth or the results of people learning the stories of these saints and what has happened in the past?
There are many ways I think people can read it and gain from it, but I have to admit I've had a particular heart within my prayer and while praying with these saints and while writing this book for the wavering Catholics out there, for those who wonder how God can allow such trials within his church, how he could allow such corruption or even error or doctrinal confusion or anything like that. I have a heart for them to be able to read this book and gain strength to stay in the church, to never give up their faith, to never give up their heritage within the Catholic Church, and to grow in holiness through this trial that I believe we are facing in our contemporary times. So ultimately, I mean, I would love it if many, many people got this book, but if one soul was saved from leaving the church who found the strength through the intercession of these saints to stay through to the end, I would count that as the most glorious success.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Alec Torres, for joining us today to talk about the saints in light of the upcoming Feast Day of All Saints coming right up. And your new book is Persecuted from Within, from Sophia Institute Press. For those people who'd like to pick this up or learn more, what's the best place that they can go?
I definitely recommend people go and support our Catholic publishers to Sophia Institute Press online. Type that in, Persecuted from Within. It should be very easy to find. If for some reason you're unable or you'd like to find it elsewhere, it is on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, things like that.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Alec Torres, co-author of the new book, Persecuted from Within. Thank you so much for joining us on today's program.
I really appreciate it.
God bless. That was Alec Torres, co-author of Persecuted from Within. Check that one out from Sophia Institute. It's a fascinating take on the history of saints and the way that they have moved forward both inside and outside of their congregations. And that's all the time we have for today's program. If you missed any of this program or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio, download the audio archives, or check out the EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Alec Torres, author of Persecuted from Within, out from Sophia Institute Press, and also Susan Tassone, joining us to talk about her brand new book for children on purgatory. And I'd like to thank you today for joining me on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth a hunt. Talk to you next week.